Okay, let's get started here. Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 Repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I am net control for today, January 26, 2021. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so it will break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness topics with particular emphasis on COVID-19 news and any other emergency topics that you'd like. All amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during the net. When you check in, please identify with your call time, slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's start first with anybody who might be on the Echo Link system that would like to check in for the emergency prep net. Come now, please. Hearing no one on the EchoLink system, so let's take some check-ins from anyone, anywhere, for the emergency prep net.
Hi, Brett. Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, East Albany, with a handheld.
W7, November Alpha Tango, Nate.
Good evening, Brett. Whiskey 7, India, Victor, November, Ivan, Albany.
Good evening. This is Kilo, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Whiskey 7, Charlie, Charlie Mike, Bruce Dundee.
Okay, a little pause in the action there. There's Richard, Whiskey 0, Echo Delta Foxtrot. Was enjoying Richard's lunch bunch today and his characteristics of Oregonians. I was going to tell you, Richard, that I'm aging myself a little bit, but you were talking about measuring distance in hours. I think with younger people, maybe when we first got here to Oregon, they measured distance in Henry's. Hi. Let me get Bruce, Whiskey 7, Charlie, Charlie, Mike. He was in there. Art was in there. Kilo, Kilo 7, Alpha, Romeo, Tango. Ivan, Whiskey 7, India, Victor, November. And let's see, Nate, Whiskey 7, November, Alpha, Tango. And Steve started the group off, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel, Mike. Okay, anybody else?
Kilo, Juliet 7, Sierra Alpha Delta, Daniel, West Salem.
There's Daniel, Kilo, Juliet 7, Sierra Alpha Delta. I hope Richard got that reference to Henry's. It has nothing to do with inductance. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'm around here, Brett. You can put me in your log. Kilo 1, Victor, India, November. K1VIN, Kevin. On the bridge going over here to West Salem. Only wet on the bridges.
Good evening. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, this is Walton Woodburn.
Okay, another pause in action. There's Walt, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. And Kevin, Kilo 1, Victor India November, with a I guess, road report out there. That's good to know. A little dicey around 3 o'clock today in the Salem area in terms of driving. It actually seems to be better now. Well, Kevin, do you agree? It's now the weather, I'm showing like 38 degrees here where I am. Yeah, we had a lot of snowfall quickly, and it was cold. My weather balloon took off today, and it was the first measurement was -2 degrees centigrade. That's, of course, a little bit below freezing. And, everybody was quite befuddled by it. Lots of traffic problems and things like that. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about winter driving. Kevin out there is an expert in that. He has some ideas. Other people might want to talk about that, too. So anyway, if Kevin's around, you can ask him winter driving tips because he likes to go and takes a car and drives it on the snow. So he's quite well-versed in driving on the snow there. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We're taking check-ins.
Okay, 6, Sierra Tango X-ray.
There's Dan, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray. Welcome. I was listening a little bit to the, I couldn't actually talk last night because I was out chasing balloons at night, but I was listening to the Heritage Net. And good net. You guys are getting, I don't know, I'm going to have to go join you guys. You were starting to talk about emergency preparedness last night. I'm hoping maybe if you involved in the discussion of the storms, history of storms and ham radio, that was a great topic. So if there's anything that you want to bring over to this net, or if anybody had any further comments on that, we can also talk about that. Good topic there. Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Why don't we pause here for just a minute? We have 11 people here so far. We will take some more check-ins, but let's see if there's anybody has any announcements. Okay, well anyway, I'll go ahead and I'll do the repeater announcements. Maybe someone who's a weather buff can look up the weather, see what the story is on the weather for the rest of the evening here. We got a little bit thrown by having the weather arrive a little earlier and more severely than what they thought. So anyway, caused emergencies. People were in trouble today. So as you know, yep, it was a big snowstorm today, at least in South Salem. We had, snow, I guess, even in Kaiser today a little bit. So, but out here where I am at 550 feet, I think we have probably 6 inches of snow. And, boy, it was a mess. We had city buses, that couldn't get going, and they were stuck in the middle of the road, and cars were off in the ditch, and Skyline Road was closed, and, not a pretty sight. It was a truck across the street from me that was stuck, backed up against the curb, and all that. So it was quite an afternoon. It actually seems to be better now. Anyway, so repeater stuff. Well, we just heard tonight the Youthnet at 5:30 on Tuesdays, and they were asking what your favorite vegetable was tonight, and we had to, of course, argue about what was a vegetable and what wasn't, right? Just can't answer the question. Of course, right? That was fun. So anyway, Tuesdays at 5:30, the Youthnet, and need more youths under 18-year-olds out there. Too many over 18-year-olds filling up the net. It was a good net for her, but I think she'd like to hear some young people. Anyway, and of course tonight is the emergency prep net. Wednesday nights we have our slow scan TV net. Thursday nights our mesh network net. At different times. I did actually put out a listing of what I thought were all the nets, and that would be on the groups.io page for WA7ABU, groups.io. So look on there, and we actually should have a list of all the nets and net control operators on there. So again, I should plug again, the Monday night net is a heritage net, and that one seems to be quite popular with people. So that's a new net, and Cliff is doing a great job there at 7 o'clock on Mondays. Are there any other announcements? Come now, please. Okie doke. Well, let's see. Anybody else want to check in for the emergency preparedness net?
Good evening. KG7SAI, Clifford in Salem.
Okay, let's see. Actually, SAI. So was it Kilo Bravo 7, Sierra Alpha India? Because I also have a Kilo Golf 7, Sierra Alpha India. Which is it here? Sorry.
Kilo Golf Sierra. Sorry. It's been a long time. Cage, the Kilo Golf 7, Sierra Alpha India, Clippers, Salem.
Okay, got you, Clifford. For some reason, I didn't have the entry updated, but I have looked you up, and there you are in my log. Thank you for checking in. Anybody else? That was Kilo Golf 7, Sierra Alpha India, Clifford. Thanks. Anybody else?
Whiskey 7, Golf November India, Steve in Almsville.
There's Steve, Whiskey 7, Golf November India. Welcome, Steve. Good signal tonight from Almsville. Our balloon was floating over Almsville for the longest time yesterday. Then it moved on to Staten a little bit, and it backed up and went. It was kind of spiraling. And it finally ended up over Sublimity and ditched itself on Fern Ridge Road. And Bryant went out and got it tonight. But it was kind of interesting. It was sort of spiraling over your neighborhood there. Okay, this is the Emergency Preparedness Net, and we are taking check-ins. Actually, just a plug here for doing things like learning a lot about using Simplex and searching for signals. So, think about how... how would you find somebody just by, like, their radio signal alone? That's what part of the intent of radio direction finding is. And, we've made it into little competitions and sports, and people do that stuff. But it is interesting when you have a weak transmitter that you can hear. If you get it up high enough, you can hear it really, really well, if it's up in the clear. And it's a great example of the way our radios work. If you're not getting out, try to go up to a high point and get in the clear. And you're going to be heard a lot better than you will, when you're near the ground, and especially with something like an HT, okay? We were talking a little bit, someone was mentioning about doing cross-band repeater work, and that's another topic we can talk about too. But, if you can't get out with your HT, you might consider setting up something like a cross-band repeater, which gives you more power. But, where would be the place to put that repeater? At the bottom of the valley or up on the hill? That's, sounds common sense, but that's what you need to do. And if you do want to set up something like that with, say, two HTs, again, it's not going to work so well unless you have good antennas and you're in a good position. So we've learned from working with these very low-power transmitters, like on the balloon, on UHF, that gosh, you can hear it just everywhere. Anywhere in the state, you can hear it when it's up in the air. But when it hits the ground, you need to be right on top of it in order to hear it. And quite surprising that you think, oh, it's so loud. So when you go out and drive to look for it, it's very difficult to find it. But when you can get within about a quarter mile of what's laying on the ground, then you can hear it. But that's how close you have to be on something's weak signal and near the ground in order to hear it. Any comments on that?
KG7SAI. I remember a few years ago on 151.6250, I believe that's just a business band frequency, the hot air balloons would do their trek across the sky from, I don't know, one city to another, and you could hear their handheld radios the whole time.
right. And that's why, you know, it's interesting when you look to do some of the stuff that we do in ham radio that, you know, like satellites, trying to listen to the International Space Station, things like that. You know, they're only over for a short period of time, but they're quite strong when they're flying overhead because there's really nothing in the way. And it's a line of sight to most places. And I think that people have to realize that our terrain really makes a huge difference. You know, we have a lot of rolling hills, so it's, you know, they're not giant mountains, but that, you know, what we find is when you're driving around, that just going up and down the dips as you're driving down the country road, you know, that blocks the signal when you're down low, and then you come back over the crest of the hill, you hear it again. It's a, you know, quite interesting. So, yeah, just keep that in mind when you're out and about, or if you're ever doing simplex, that, you know, it really helps to understand and practice a little bit with the lower power simplex modes. You won't make the mistake of thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to, like, I don't know. I always think, like, oh, I should go camping. But I always go camping, like, next to the stream in the bottom of the canyon where it's pretty and green and things like that, you know. But, yeah, nobody wants to go camping on the upper exposed hillside, but which is a better place to get your radio working. Anyway, this is the Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and this is the Emergency Preparedness Net. See if there's anybody else has any questions or wants to check in. I'm going to talk a little bit. I'll just do a quick overview of the COVID situation here, and then we can move on and talk about other things, okay? So I've been told I just lecture too much, so maybe other people can bring up some things that they'd like. But let's see if there's any other check-ins. Okay, not hearing anybody. Okay, so let's just go, of course, the topic at hand is vaccines in Oregon. Last week we had a mention of where to go to get information on that. So, and I will tell you that website, covidvaccine.oregon.gov, and I think I put a link to it in the WA7ABU groups.io page. I want to know about vaccines. It's kind of a moving target as to what's happening with it. You know, we're doing our best here, and, you know, I guess we're trying to get some more resources and get the medicine delivered and get better distribution centers. I think it's going to get better. Shouldn't get too much worse, I hope. But we're plugging along. According to our dashboard on covidvaccine.org.gov, we've given out 231,136 people have been vaccinated. Series is in progress. They actually give us a total of 45,057 people have been fully vaccinated. That means they've had two doses for a total of 276,193 people. So, I don't know why those numbers don't all add up to 325, but there you go. So we're getting there. We're still not, getting there quite as quickly as we'd like in terms of getting doses per day if we think about the number of people we have to get through. You know, we did get 10,000 doses, it says here on the 25th, that's yesterday, 86.59 the day before. Anyway, we're in that sort of range. We really need to kind of step it up, but it's happening. The whole, you can click on that webpage. It'll take you to more specifics. If you click on their dashboard, it shows you if you're interested in who's gotten it and how old they are and what group they're in and all that stuff. All on covidvaccine.org.gov. Any questions on that part of it? Yeah, Richard, go ahead with your comment, and I'll repeat it for the benefit of any recording that was being made. Okay, thank you, Richard. Just for the benefit of the recording, Richard is saying that if you go to covidvaccine.oregon.gov, focus on the lower right-hand corner, as there's been changes made, and there's a little icon that says, hello there. Use this tool to determine when you can get a vaccine in Oregon or ask a question. And there's a big chart in the middle that says, talks about the different groups and phases, and you can read that as well, but I guess there's been some changes from last time. Go ahead, Richard, with more comments. Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, and again, for benefit of a recording, Richard was saying that the changes to this website were a result of probably scheduling problems. Didn't have a good way to sign up and schedule, and wasn't realistic in terms of which groups were going to go first and things like that. So I will tell you that just one person that I know who got the vaccine said that they had received the first vaccine and they're due for the next vaccine at the end of this week. In the meantime, the first time they just were signed up through work and downloaded the paperwork and brought it there. And now on the second time you go on there, it says, oh, you need to make I think it's My Health or, let's see, My Chart. Anyway, there was Salem Health was handling this. And so if you were a Salem person, you're supposed to go back to the place you got it and sign up with the My Chart thing, I think, through Salem Health. So that was a little confusing. So anyway, I think that we are trying to work out the bugs on the sign-ups. Anybody else have any comments on this? Okay, so, well, anyway, just remember that covidvaccine.org.gov and try to work your way through it. Again, I think that we need to, things are going to change also as more federal resources come in. There was some confusion, I'll just say, some things that I read in the news, which are they're true. One of the things that I wanted to bring up is kind of interesting, and I don't like to get into the politics of things at all, but you may have heard that the Pfizer vaccine, there's a little confusion about the number of doses there are in a bottle. And if you've ever used an injectable medicine, whether you've vaccinated your own pets or, whether you give yourself insulin or maybe allergy shots or something like that, oftentimes they come, injectables. They come two ways. One is in a little vial called an ampule, which sometimes is used for medicines, break open the top and it has a single use in a little ampule. But when you have a multi-dose vial, in the case of these vaccines, from Pfizer, there's a powder in the bottom of the vial, and then they have to put in a certain amount of saline, of sterile saline, into the bottle and mix it up before they give it. Now, if you read the actual instructions on it and what was described by the FDA literature, they say they put in 1.8 milliliters of fluid, of a saline in this, and mix it up, okay? Now, they're not used to use, you can think of it as cc's, if you will, okay? But if you ever used a syringe, they're marked in milliliters or cc's. So the dose is 0.3 milliliters of the vaccine once it's mixed up. Well, you do the math, It's supposed to be a 5-dose bottle, and you just put 1.8 ml of liquid in there. So what does that mean? Exactly. So if they put enough stuff in there, now I can tell you this, that it kind of depends on, what size needle you're using to drop the doses in the first place. Now, again, I've done this in the lab, but normally what happens is that you have to puncture a rubber seal on the top of a glass vial. Okay, so these little glass bottles, they have a little rubber stopper in them, and then this little aluminum clip that goes around the outside. You pop off the top, you wipe it with alcohol, you poke it. But you don't poke it with the needle you're going to poke a person with, because the needle would just bend going through that little rubber hole. So, just a little practical thing here is that, you poke it with a bigger needle, okay? And then you draw it up into the syringe, you take off the bigger needle, and you replace it with a little needle, and you clear the air out of the syringe to get the right, the 0.3 ml dose, right? Okay, so the issue with that is I think normally what happens, and we don't worry about things that are, you know, not in precious supply, that they give you a little extra just in case you, you know, you spill a little bit or you squeeze out a little bit more or you use a big needle. You know, if you use a big needle or a syringe that has some air gap in it, it's called an air gap syringe, it's hard to draw that last little bit of dose out of there. But if you use a small needle and you pull it out very carefully, then yes, you know, 6 times 0.3 is 1.8, so that is 6 doses. Now, KG7GDB, in my opinion, this is where it gets a little bit confusing and maybe policy-wise, and I don't want to talk about decisions like this, but part of what I read was that apparently there was some argument about, you know, well, Pfizer said that, well, yes, there, you know, if you're going to say there's 6 doses in there, then you ought to be letting us package it as saying 6 doses and paying us for that 6 dose. So there you go. That's the craziness of it. Now, apparently, this makes it harder because if you want really want 6 doses out of it, then you have to have one of these low-volume syringes that can suck that last dose out of there, and those, that puts a little crimp in the supply chain. Does everyone have those small-volume syringes and needles? Are those in versus all the other needles and syringes that we could use, you see? So, again, that would cause a supply chain. You know, we have a little labeling problem plus a problem with can everyone in their kit, and there also is one company, was it Kimberly Clark? No, somebody was producing a kit with 5 syringes, you know, in it. So now all of a sudden they've got to rebuild their kit and make it 6 syringes, right? So you can see how that might cause a hiccup in the supply chain.
W7NAT.
Yes, sir, Nate, go ahead.
Could you give me that a little slower, that website that you just mentioned? I went down to the hospital and I asked them how I would be able to get, you know, when my time comes, which supposedly now is the 8th of next month. And they said all you have to do is to go down to the fairgrounds, get there a little early, you'll have a form to fill out, and that's all there is to it.
Okay, so let me give you the you should read that, because, again, that may, I don't know when you talk to them or who you talk to, but right now what they're saying is it's sort of in rules are changing a little bit. And what they're talking about is that, yes, it would be great if that were the case, but it'll move a lot more smoothly if your paperwork is already filled out and you can sort of show up and have an appointment. That's kind of what they were sort of getting to. You know, so at any rate, it is, again, COVID vaccine, all one word. I'll do that phonetically. Charlie Oscar Victor India Delta Victor Alpha Charlie Charlie, India, November, Echo, .oregon.gov. Golf, Oscar, Victor. COVIDvaccine.oregon.gov. Do you need any fills?
I got it. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, this is logistically is trouble. You know, sure, we got 2 different vaccines, and they have different handling requirements and things, and we have a vaccine distribution center at the fairgrounds, so probably that's where you're going to go, but maybe by the 8th we'll have a different place for you to go. So this is why we got to go to one location that's official to figure this out. And, you know, if you can sign up, you know, I guess if you've already taken the vaccine, you know, first shot, you're supposed to go back and get the same kind. That would be the best practice. We don't want you, you know, that, does that make sense to people that you won't take the Pfizer one and then you take the Moderna one? Does that make sense to people?
BUV with a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Walt.
So when you get your shot, you get a little card and it tells them when you had which brand name kind of thing. But the other thing is that this whole process is still incredibly fluid. Things are changing. They're trying to figure out how they're going to speed up getting the actual vaccine itself and keep the good flow with that going. So really kind of any data that you find now is changing as rapidly as they can update their web page. And so if you know that your age bracket is 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks out, I suggest start looking very close to that time frame because it's going to change.
Yep, good point there, Walt, definitely. And I think they, you know, I think at the top it's different today. It says starting the 25th. Well, today is the 26th. If you work in a public or private K-12 school setting, your district will contact you about scheduling a vaccination. If you're a child care worker, your employer will connect you with information. If you're an employer, your county will reach out to you to provide information. So, you know, again, that's going to be different than the way we've been doing the health workers there. So, anyway, yes, I very good advice. Anybody else have any experience with this or any tips for people? Okay, so let's move on a little bit. Again, we get through our COVID news. It's this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. Let's see. So Oregon's doing a little better. Remember I told you guys that we'd have a hump in January, which we did. We seem to have gotten over the little hump, post-holiday hump, and we're heading down. That's a good trend. Hospitalization level, again, that's the one we worry about the most because it affects everybody's health. 308 now in the hospital. That's much better than it was last time. There are still 698 average new cases a day. ICU looks like it's about the same as it was. Actually, regular ICUs have gone down a little bit. It's up to 70 patients, so that's good. Now, the death trend, again, we talked about that before, it's starting to go up a little bit, and that should make sense to people, that those people that were in the hospital from before, that they might be dying now after 4 weeks. So here we're the last week in January. So it all works out. If you look at these trends, they kind of make sense, right? So the good thing is that, yes, we're on the downward part of the trend for the cases and the hospitalizations and the numbers of people, what we call the daily positive test rate, they're all looking pretty good. Good trends, all going down. Hospitalization deaths are going to go up. Again, that's based on the 4 weeks prior data when you had a hump. Okay, so anyway, you can, if you're interested in those numbers, the trends are pretty easy to read. Okay, so. There have been then some changes in the, you know, announcements today from the governor that, oh, well, she's going to make some changes in limiting, letting some people back in, you know, to some, like, gyms in a very small numbers of people could go back, theoretically. But it kind of depends, again, on whether your county itself is considered, you know, an extreme risk versus other counties that aren't. And if you look at the map, I like to look at the map on the OregonLive.com website. You can look at the different counties and find out that, yeah, you know, the counties vary. You know, Marion County is really not, is one of the worst places, you know, right? And it's not the worst in terms of cases per 10,000, but it's, you know, it's a lot of people. You know, compare us to Lane County. You know, Lane County is doing pretty well. You know, the case numbers are down, the total number of people that they have is down, you know, the positivity rate down, they've only had 47 people die, you know, and in Marion County we've had 250 people die, you know, and almost double the positivity rate. So It's not purely a population thing, but, you know, you look at low population areas, like worst place, Malheur County, gosh, you know, 1,047 cases per 10,000 people. Well, it's probably about 30,000 people total there. I don't know exactly how many is in Malheur County. Not very many. They've only had 55 deaths, but their positivity rate is very high. So, yeah, if you encounter somebody in Malheur County, yeah, they might have COVID. Otherwise, I think you have lots of room to run around and stay away from people. KG7, GDB, any comments or questions about our daily statistics?
W7MTL.
Yeah, Craig, go ahead. The only reason to bring the risk level up is that that affects businesses and rules as far as reopening goes, so you got to know that. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, go ahead and check me in. But yeah, there's hardly anybody in. There's more cattle and coyotes and antelope probably than there is people in Malheur County. But I heard a lot of it is from the Eastern Oregon prison over there is where a lot of the cases are.
Okay, Craig, yeah, very good. Good comment. No, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, would not want to be the policymaker. That's why we're, you know, for this stuff, because, you know, California is having the same problem that, you know, there are places where it's better and it's worse, you know, and people say, well, it's not fair to have different rules for, you know, that we come up with a statewide rule that everybody follows it. But, you know, the risk is really kind of, again, we've talked about this again and again, the risk comes from being indoors and large groups of people, you know, who aren't wearing masks. That's, you know, you just come up with the formula for, you know, viral success. And then, you know, drive around a lot and visit people, you know. You know, you could think of all the, you know, turn it around and say, what all the bad things we could do, you know. So, but, you know, as far as getting back to normal and things like that, we're a long ways from normal, unfortunately, and we still have to be adjust and be cautious. And the vaccines, even though they're very promising, unless we can roll them out at a very high rate, it's not going to make much difference right now. It would be better if we could flatten our curves and stay low. And we're doing well in Oregon, you know, honestly, compared to others. But if we could we can keep our numbers down, then the vaccine's more effective. Eventually, we'll have, you know, only people who would be around that have been either vaccinated, gotten both doses, or have had the virus, you know, form a kind of a buffer that we call the herd immunity, and then the virus will start to lose out and stop spreading, okay? So anyway, that's all there is to say about the vaccines and this. Does anybody have any questions that they had about read in the news or anything I could look up? I mean, I don't want to talk about COVID all the time. Are there any questions or check-ins at this time? KG7, GDB, this is the PrepNet.
KK7, ART with a question.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll take EDF first, Richard, and then Art. Go ahead, Richard. Okay, well, Richard asks a rhetorical question. It seems doesn't seem to make sense very much why we want to double mask versus a single. We can't seem to manage to wear the single mask. It is, I don't know, if you try to double mask it, the thing is that what we're trying to do is achieve a seal as well as a filtration, right? So I will say that when I wear a double mask, it seems like it seals up a little better, I think, you know, than, you know, regular. Obviously, you've got to figure out the, you know, and apparently men are worse at this, that the nose and up to your cheeks and down around your chin, everything has got to have a tight seal on it, no matter what kind of mask you have. So the ones that tie behind the head get a little tighter than the ones that just go over your ears, right? So, and there's all kinds of different designs now and what have you. But, you know, if you there have been literature reports that talk about the effectiveness of different kinds of filtration material, and more layers in general of anything work better than fewer layers, right? So let me get a drip. So, you know, you can, one of the things that's nice about sort of the standard surgical procedure masks is that they seem to fit a lot of faces pretty well, and they have a little, you know, wire thing that goes over your bridge of your nose, and that tends to seal around your face better. So one of the keys to wearing personal protective equipment, and that includes even the fancier ones, is that you really need to get a good seal around your nose and face and get one that fits your shape of your face. And so, yeah, maybe two masks makes it fit better, but you're definitely doubling the layers, and again, it's not going to be effective, like you say, if you stick your nose out of it. You know, your nose has to be covered. So, yeah, that's all I can say about that. Are there any comments on that before I take Art? Okay, so, again, any mask is better than no mask, and again, it's we talked about this before, it is trying to limit the spread of from people, particularly those who are asymptomatic, okay? Obviously, if you have symptoms, it also helps limit the spread, and there, you can look through these literature situation reports and look back at, always have something on different categories of masks, comparisons, and what have you, to read about these things. But I would look at the actual articles that they talk about and see what they say. We are learning more and more every day. It's been almost just about a year since we first heard of this. And so when you start getting frustrated with the fact that we don't know anything, we know a lot more than we did a year ago about this stuff. I look forward to understanding it better. But ultimately, it boils down to a few. Reducing exposure is the number one strategy, and not spreading it around through, you know, silliness, like not wearing the mask covering your nose, also has to be done. But anyway, that's my take on it there. Art, do you have a comment, please?
Yes. So in the last couple of days, I've been reading about this new COVID strain in South Africa that seems to be showing some significant resistance to antibodies. Do you know anything about that? I was just wondering if you had any comments about that, and potentially somewhat disturbing, at least from what I've read. KK7ART.
Okay, yeah, so this is something we're learning about. Okay, so the thing is that there are variants. They're using the word variants. If you can look up COVID-19 variants on the Wikipedia right now, so people have put together a table. You know, viruses mutate all the time. You know, they're not really very all that great at reproducing themselves, okay? Now, just think in terms of basic biology that, yes, you're going to end up with some variants that might be ineffective. They might not work as well as the normal wild type or whatever you want to call it. The first known strain is not really the predominant strain right now. The one that sort of went through Italy was the predominant strain. But now we're starting to see, yes, there are these variants that, like the British variant, which seems to have taken over in Britain as far as being the predominant strain. That one is called the B.1.7 variant. Now, they've also discovered another variant in South Africa, which is called B.1.351. I don't expect you to memorize it. I haven't. Okay. And yes, it seems to be that one, actually, when they test it against antisera, they get, you know, COVID serum. I'm just reading this little summary here. That, yes, it seems like the South African variant, what they look at, what they call neutralizing activity, okay, when you, like the Moderna vaccine, they were just got some results on that, and they showed that yep, there was no real reduction in the effectiveness of the Moderna vaccine against the British strain, but there was a decrease in neutralizing antibodies that were effective against the South African variant. So I did read that Moderna apparently is synthesizing another vaccine as a possible booster shot that could be given against the South African variant if it happens to be to spread. So, okay, so to go further into what, you know, happens with that, but basically one problem, if you will, it's a strategy, but one good thing and a bad thing is one that we focused on the spike protein on the COVID antibody. When they created these new vaccines, they looked at the spikes and they said, well, the spike is the thing that attaches to the cell that gives the virus a foothold, and it seems to be that ones that had more spikes on it are worse as far as infectivity, things like that. So let's make our vaccine against spikes. So they knew the sequence of the spike RNA, and they created vaccines that were the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine took part of that sequence of that spike, and that's the basis of our vaccine. So we trick our cells into taking these mRNA particles, which are kind of like a blueprint for making protein, and it absorbs it into the cell, and the cell starts churning out portions of spike proteins, and then our immune system says, hey, I don't like that stuff, let's make antibodies. Okay, so then just to go on with it a little bit to try to answer the question, is that what happens if we get a mutation in the spike protein? And some mutations, again, it's a fairly long molecule, so some mutations wouldn't make any difference. Others might change the shape of it. What if it changes the shape of the part that your vaccine is attaching to? Well, then it's going to be probably less effective because the antibodies are very specific to a shape on a protein, and if it's slightly shaped different, it may not bind as well. So that's the kind of thing that they're trying to study right now. Now, the good news is that they can synthesize this stuff and manufacture it, if we get variations. They can do that strategy, and it may have to happen if one variant becomes troublesome or we might end up with a cocktail of different vaccines against different types of variants and at some point in time in the future. Right now, if we can get vaccinated quickly and keep it from spreading so much, maybe we can keep these variants down. Don't travel to South Africa, right? KG7, GDB. Okay, so anyway, this is the emergency preparedness app. We talked about 40 minutes here now, 50 minutes, about COVID. Is there anything else that, again, I guess the thing is that variants are going to happen, and it still shouldn't affect your behavior. You're still going to do exactly the same thing that you've been doing since we started talking about this back a year ago in March. Take your care of yourself the same way. Your personal behavior shouldn't change. If your time comes to get the vaccine, get the vaccine. I think it is working out that it is safe and probably effective. We can't tell you that 100% because not enough time has passed, but not very many people are having that bad of side effects from it, so safe part is good. Okay, so as we start injecting more people, probably there will be more reports of adverse events, but so far it seems like it's fairly minor. A few people have had a little reaction, allergic reaction to the probably the polyethylene glycol preservatives, but that's about all we've seen. So that's pretty good. Vaccines all have some little side effects, but the benefit is much greater than the risk, usually, in vaccines. Okay, so in the meantime, they're also coming down the pike with new vaccines. We're supposed to hear about Johnson & Johnson's vaccine sometime this month. I don't know why we haven't heard about it, but we'll talk about that. It's a different kind, different strategy. So we'll learn about that and see whether it gets emergency authorization. All right. So again, there was a maybe we're done with. Are we done with COVID? Any other questions? If I don't know them, I will tell you. I don't make stuff up. But is there anything else that people wanted to talk about there, or do you want to talk about the weather, or what would you like to talk about?
KJ7SAG, comment.
Let's see, KJ7SAE. Can you do the last part in phonetics, please?
Sierra Alpha Delta, Daniel.
Okay, Daniel, go ahead with your comment.
Just a comment on personal protection. I didn't realize this. I work at a hospital, but the N95 masks, they actually fit test every employee to make sure they get the right size issued to them. So, you know, if you buy one from Amazon or one of the big box stores, it's not one size fits all. And the other is the encouragement to use eye protection, particularly in public places. I always wear a shield. Goggles are great, but safety glasses help. KJSAB.
Okay, yes, again, you bring up a good point that, you know, if you're a healthcare worker, they've had protective equipment guidelines for a long time. It's kind of unfortunate. It actually says, change the mask every time you see a patient, right? Every time you go in and out of the room, you're supposed to change everything when you're dealing with an infectious patient. Don't have quite the number of resources for that, unfortunately. Hopefully that might get a little bit better, but yes, they fit them. And yeah, there's different models that fit different people differently, and the way they check it is they actually do a test, like you mentioned, to make sure the fit is good. Now, that's a little bit of the problem with the general public. We can't seem to get 30% of the people, you know, to even wear a mask. But, and the ones that are wearing it, there's been some studies, like in Brazil, it was a very large number of people who wore it improperly. But obviously, the better it covers your nose and mouth and around your eyes and, you know, it and doesn't leak, the better reduction in the spread of anything that you might be breathing out. Now, I just read a little statistic here, again, from this literature report from Washington, University of Washington. It says, 30% of cases in this one are asymptomatic. That's a lot of cases that are asymptomatic. So, that's the kind of thing we're dealing with, is we don't really know who has this. We don't know, unfortunately, with our vaccines. I mentioned this before. They did not test to everybody that got the vaccine to see if they had COVID. So we don't know whether the vaccine just makes you asymptomatic. You know, ultimately, the end result of the clinical study is to get a certain number of people who actually do show symptoms and then compare the numbers of the ones developing symptoms in one group versus the other group. And that's the good news, is that, it really protects you, you know, if you have the vaccine, from getting a serious illness if you've been vaccinated twice. Okay, we know that. That works a lot better than not having it at all. Okay, but we really don't know what happened to all the rest of the people in there. It's like, well, whether a bunch of people that, you know, they had a vaccine that never got any symptoms because they were completely immune, or because maybe they just were asymptomatic. We didn't really look at that. So, and just like out in the public, even if you don't have a vaccine, how many of those people had asymptomatic COVID? We don't know. So that's the problem. Just assume that the risk is there. Wear your mask as best you can, and save the good masks for those situations where you can't possibly avoid being around people for more than just a few minutes. KG7, GDB. Okay, so last few minutes here. had a little winter driving fun today, and again, talk about the use of ham radio. I'd like, you know, I'd like to be able to get on the ham radio and talk about what's happening locally, like if there's situational awareness is, I think, one of the best emergency prep tools that we have with the radio. You can immediately get on the radio, identify yourself, tell where you are, and tell people what the situation is. You know, if we're having a weather problem, you know, you may not realize that, yeah, okay, it doesn't happen the same everywhere. Our weather today was very different depending on where you lived. You know, South Salem, it was not a great place for driving around today at 3 o'clock. Really hazardous. Lots of snow came down quickly. Roads were incredibly slippery. People were going off the road, and buses were, you know, stuck in the middle of the street, and it was just awful, you know. And I guess down in Scioto, they didn't really have any snow, you know. So you can't sort of generalize, but you can tell people what's happening and share information that might help people. So, again, waiting it out. Gosh, if I were out working and I had, you know, a car with bald tires and things like that, it probably would have been better to work late today and come home, because now the weather's a lot nicer. But this is not the day to come home at 3 o'clock, I tell you. Does anybody have any, you know, thing about driving in winter weather? Or, you know, I mean, I always say in Oregon that weather's going to change, you know, just, you know, wait a few minutes. But practical speaking, anything you want to share with us about driving in snow or what to do around winter weather in Oregon?
Yeah, Whiskey 7, India Victor November.
Yep. Ivan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I found out, last year, I believe it was, there, I put LED headlights in the Ford, and it had the halogen, your normal incandescent halogen headlights prior to that. If you have the LED or the HID style headlights, every once in a while you need to go out and sweep your lenses off, because they don't project heat out the front through the lens of the headlight, so it doesn't melt the snow off, and you do get some snow buildup. So, yeah, that, and just kind of slow down and brake early, accelerate gently, stuff like that. That's pretty much that.
W7ABN.
Okay, so that's good tips. So you said that the new headlights, the LEDs, don't melt the snow, so they can accumulate snow. So I guess that's something to be aware of if you're going to be driving for a while in it. Is there anything that would, I don't know, any of our rain X's or anything like that would help shed the snow off of our LED headlights there, Ivan, do you think?
Well, rain X helps, but when you're scooting on down the road there doing your, now depending on the weather, per se, you know, 30 miles an hour-ish, we'll say, what happens is the snowflake hits the lens and it sticks. And then it builds up as the next one hits on it, and not creating any heat, it doesn't melt off. But I haven't thought about or tried the Rain-X. I might have to give that a shot, but just to see. But anyhow, still, it's just something to keep in the back of your mind, especially if you start transitioning into nighttime. Your light's not going to put out through the snow as well as it does a lens. Just food for thought. W7IVN, have a wonderful evening, Brett.
Okay, very good. With anybody else, we're kind of running out of time here, but, you know, there are people who have a lot of experience driving in snow, and I guess if you don't have experience driving in snow, we can try to give them some tips, but obviously things like your braking distance and your following distance, those are all kind of common sense things, but it can sometimes, like today when we were driving, it was very surprising to see the number of people that were off the road and in the ditches. You know, so they obviously didn't get it. You know, it surprised them. And I think partly is we tend to rely on predictions, you know, and so, and then we're sort of like surprised when it doesn't, you know, wow, well, they didn't say it was going to snow like this, so wow, you know, they get all, yeah, so it is kind of important to be, that's why I tried to get on and share that the roads didn't look good, you know, and that people were having trouble, and, you know, people actually were a problem, that they were blocking the roads, and you know, so kind of knowing your route before you go, and realizing, I think most people realize that, hey, we're going to go take a trip to the snow today, they would be prepared for that idea. But, you know, maybe down in the South Valley, where they didn't end up with a snowfall, it was like, well, why should we prepare for the snow today? It's just, so anyway, there are a couple things. Anybody have any final tips about, like, how it just with weather changing like this rapidly? Anything that you do to kind of get ready or have in your car just in case the weather turns bad?
K1VIN.
Kevin, do you carry anything in your car with you, or what do you do? I mean, you're very experienced with this, but when the weather gets unsettled, what do you want to put in your car?
I think something that everybody should have in their car, no matter what's going on any time during the winter, is some sort of a shovel to be able to dig the snow out from either in front or behind of your tires so that there isn't a lip of snow that you're stuck in, and then you're on ice too. Then you can shovel and make a track for your tires to go the direction you need to go. Another thing is just a small bag of kitty litter. Those things are, I would say, 100% necessity when there's even a slight chance of snow. Other than that, just knowledge basis and don't try to go too slow. I notice a lot of people just don't understand that you have a vehicle that you have to keep moving. And if you're going 5 miles an hour and you're going up a hill, you can't keep it moving. You don't have enough traction. So what happens is you get halfway up the hill and you stall out because you don't have any more momentum to go up the hill. And so you end up, you know, in the middle of the hill, sliding backwards, find yourself sideways in the middle of the road. You're in quite the predicament. But, you know, that things like the shovel and the kitty litter are going to help with that situation to get you out of, you know, just the side of the road slide off type stuff.
Okay, Richard, I think I'll let you have a final word on this, and I'll repeat it for the sake of the recording. Of course, you guys can talk more about winter driving tips at that. Kitty litter and the shovel. I don't have the shovel. Actually, I have plenty of kitty litter. I should probably put my kitty litter out there. So that is good advice there, Kevin. Go ahead, Richard, with your comment. Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf, Delta Bravo, and for the sake of the recording, Richard says, again, know your vehicle. You have a front-wheel versus rear-wheel vehicle. That's definitely important if you have... you know, which car, what wheels do the chains go on, right? Some vehicles are all-wheel drive, but some are primarily front-wheel drive versus rear-wheel drive, and so generally the all-wheel drive SUVs, it goes on the front for your tires, but truck-based SUVs, they chains will go on the rear. And he says that you want to align, if you have a rear-wheel drive truck or something like that, keep your front aligned with the rear. And he said mentioned driving, you know, that the gravel and the sand and things that they tend to put up high on the road tends to end up on the edges of the road, probably around where the white line is, and perhaps you can get better traction not driving in the standard lane but over to the edge, you know, at certain times. So all good advice, good things to mention there. I know some people that like to carry some weight in the back of their truck too, because trucks tend to be a little light in the back end. Having some extra stuff in the back you know, that adds some weight. Maybe a couple bags of sand would be appropriate back there, just to get a little more weight in the back end. Do you agree with that one, Kevin?
Yes, that's definitely a good thing to have. You know, you think of like a car that has a body all the way to the end, and a pickup truck, all you have is the bed and the rear axle, and, you know, half the weight of the frame. You know, that type of thing is something that is quite a considerable less amount of weight than the front of the vehicle, which could cause an easy slide out. You won't notice the front sliding out, but then all of a sudden your rear will slide. So adding a couple hundred pounds of weight, easily sandbags are purchased at any of your you know, the lumber supply, whatever, any of your big box stores. You're going to be able to find tubes of sand to go ahead and do that with. And then you got your sand in the back if you get stuck. You know, just grab some of that, grab that tube of sand and throw it down in front of your tires, you know, where direction you need to go. And be surprised what a little bit of sand will do in getting a little mound of snow from where you're spinning your tires and things like that. Get that sucker down with your shovel all the way down to where there's no lip that your tire needs to roll up and over. Get as much as you can all the way down till you can almost see the bottom of the tire. And that's going to be your best bet. Throw some sand down, and most of the time you're going to be able to drive out of the ditch. So, other than that, hope nobody ended up in a ditch. I guess people can let me know if that's the case. K1VIN.
Okay, Kevin gets the final word there. Good advice again, Kevin, and of course you could talk about this after the net if you want to. This time is now 8:10 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. There'll be a recording available today's discussion later on, hopefully this week, on the WA7ABUgroups.io page. And again, you might share, you know, questions and information on that groups.io page. If we didn't, you know, get to your question or your, you know, didn't get to, we got off topic or something, again, bring stuff up for discussion on the groups.io page, and share information, and you find good stuff on there too. Anyway, this net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to everyone who participated today and those of you who stood by to give us a clear frequency. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing the emergency preparedness net at 8:11 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. Stay safe, and KG7GDB, I'll be clear.